This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded February 22nd, 2011. Episode 31, Publish Popular Parts, Please.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble from Chris Gamble's Analog Life.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dave. What's going on?
Everything's happening here. I'm blowing up scopes and all sorts of things. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's all good.
That's right. Yes, I like that video a lot.
$12,000 up in smoke, no problem. Well, not literally up in smoke.
Wow.
It was. It's dramatized. It failed.
Right. They didn't ship you cash and then you lit it on fire, right?
No, exactly. Not quite that extreme. But,
yeah.
Oh, well. Yes. It's good. I think my microphone's peaking here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you're having mic problems as well, because your bench, your basement is taken apart.
Destroyed. Yeah, that's right. I am sitting at my workbench, I'll say that. But my new workbench, it's awesome. I like it so far, but it's just...
Right.
It's not done yet.
And actually, I saw the photo of the lighting you had installed, those like spotlight kind of things. What's the deal with that? Where's your LED lighting?
Well, that's track lighting. So like later I could just replace the lights that are in there with LED lighting.
Oh, it's just, right. Okay.
It just runs 120 across in parallel.
Got it. Yeah,
you just plug in lights across it. So it's kind of nice like that.
Right. Oh, yeah. Fair call.
It's good because I can point it at stuff, too. So if I have, like, a project I really need a lot of light on, I can concentrate it.
Okay,
so that's
fair
why I did
enough.
It.
Yeah. I need more lighting for my lab. It's pretty piss poor.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about it because when I was wiring it up yesterday, I was thinking, you know, can in Australia, we've talked about before how you're not allowed to work on mains and stuff. But
that's
are
right.
You, like, what's the restrictions on lighting and installing your own stuff there?
Well, you can't. Anything that connects to the mains, you are not allowed to touch. Technically, you're not even allowed to replace your own power plug on your appliance or something else. If it, you know, if it fails and you chop it off and you install a new power plug, you're not even allowed to do that, technically,
really?
I believe. Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. Oh. That seems a bit extreme.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty extreme. But, of course, no one gives a shit. But, you know, technically, legally, you're not allowed to do it.
So is that's just them covering their ass saying, like, if you shocked yourself, it's like, oh, well, you shouldn't have been doing that, so we're not paying for your medical coverage or whatever.
Well, exactly. And then the appliance can be unsold. You know, you might sell it secondhand on eBay or something like that. And if you've wired it wrong, it can go off and kill someone else. You know, it isn't just you.
Yeah.
So, and et cetera, et cetera. So,
okay.
Yeah,
so it's more of a lawyer thing than it is an electrician type thing.
Oh,
huh?
Of course. Well, the electricians push for it because it protects their industry. So, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, I can't blame him for that, I guess, but... Man, that
sucks.
Yeah,
I know, but...
I think about... I mean, personally, from the amount of time it took me to install... It took me about a day, an entire day, to install the stupid lighting, just because I was running conduit and stuff, and... You know, it's
right.
It was a hassle, so... I wouldn't have wanted to pay someone, though, because it was maybe, you know, $150 for everything in materials, and the rest was just my time, so... But I can imagine it would be a lot more for an electrician to come in and do it.
Oh, definitely. They charge you a call-out fee, and then they charge you, you know, $150 an hour or something like that. So,
well, no wonder your lab's poorly lit then, huh?
No wonder they're protecting their industry, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, I was saying that there's no wonder your lab is poorly lit because you don't want to drop money on having someone come out and fix it up, right?
No, I'm just, it's just too hard. I've got limited ways that I can put lighting in there, you know, and then the wife complains, oh, it looks ugly. And, you know, you can't just put in another fluoro strip there. And, oh, goodness.
Isn't it in your garage though? I don't get it.
Well, yeah, it is. So it's, you know, the looks aren't that important, of course, but then I've got two different types of lighting I need. One for lighting up the bench in general, then I need ones for the camera angle that I'm using, you know, and it has to light up the lab evenly, and it, you know, it's just quite hard. I mean, I bought a bunch of star LEDs to do it, but
oh cool.
I've had them sitting there for 6 months, so I haven't you know, haven't got around to, because it needs a diffuser and everything. You know, you can't just have it, you know, just blaring in my eyes when I'm, you know, shooting the blog, even though that's ideally, that's what I want. I want the light directly on me from the front, from both, you know, from different angles. And no.
See, that's the other thing I was thinking about with this track lighting is if I start doing videos, I'll have a good place to do it. But obviously, I haven't made any videos yet, so. But I will be doing one on the bench, so there is that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you're actually going to be on camera.
I will be on camera, yeah. It'll be excellent. A first. Yeah.
That'll be novel.
It will be. Watch out, I'm gunning for you.
Right. Yeah, I'm quaking in my boots.
Yeah, right? All one video, not about electronics, but about electrical installation.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we start off with a what the?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
I know we typically end on a what.
Yeah.
What the? Yeah, we don't have any sound effects today because Chris has demolished his rig, so it's all in chaos down there.
WTF, mate. There we go. That's what right. It usually is, yeah.
Well, go on. You tell us about it because you're the one who put this. You're the one who found it and put it in here.
Oh, the sound effect?
No, the WTF. TV one.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
Because it was a segue creating videos.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. That was a good segue, too. I'm sorry, Dave.
No problem.
it's a video of Björk, the Icelandic musician, pulling apart her TV.
She's doing a teardown.
Yeah, it's really
weird. Well, kinda.
Sort of, yeah. It's more like taking it apart, what's inside, you know, kind of like a... And it seems like it's earlier in her career. I haven't seen it in a while. I put this on here a couple weeks ago. But and someone actually had sent it to me. I forget who it was. I'm sorry if you send it to me. Let me know and I'll put you on the show notes. But I can't remember who it was. But yeah, it is weird, man.
Like, I know it's freaky. I watched it, well, most of it, and it's just what is she on? You know, what is she talking about? What is she trying to get at? Talking about in the end, talking about don't trust poets or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. Weird.
It's like how your TV is hypnotizing you or something, and she's trying to explain how, you know, the TV used to hypnotize her until she read this book about how TVs work, and now she's, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
It really is a what the kind of thing.
And, she's kind of a weird lady. She's a, whoever sent this, we'll post the video. It's wonky. But and it starts out though, like the reason it's relevant here is because it starts out like a teardown video, you know.
It starts out
like, oh, okay, she's gonna look inside her TV, and then it turns into something really weird. So what the F?
Interestingly, she says exactly the same thing that my wife says. She calls the circuit board like, oh, look, it's a little city, you know, it's a little miniature city. Yeah. And look, this looks like a little building, you know, the big capacitors are like buildings. And she's talking about the cable harness going up to the CRT as the elevator going up. And,
that's
and
awesome.
Look, they're little highways and everything. My wife does exactly the same thing. You know, if I'm going out to lab, are you going out to build little cities? Yes, dear.
Well, you know, Tron did the same thing, too. They just did it in a very expensive and not so successful way.
Right, yes. Have you seen the new Tron movie?
I have not seen it. I love the soundtrack, but I haven't seen it.
Right.
I've just listened over and over again.
I went to see it because I hadn't watched Tron in, like, 20 years or something. So... Yeah. So I went to see it with my brother-in-law, and we decided just before we went, we'd watch the original Tron, you know, because we hadn't seen it for so long. And I'm glad we did, because there's so many references to the first movie. If you if you don't really remember it in depth, then you'll miss, you know, every reference and stuff like that. And there's a million references to Star Wars and Jedi and all that sort of stuff as well. And I don't know. Everyone panned it, but I kind of liked it. It was all right, I thought. So in terms of, you know, capitalizing on the first movie and giving, you know, like you would see the scene and you go, oh, yeah, that was in the first movie. And, you know, they're in the exact same location opening the same door and, you know, really sort of that, and I love that sort of detail. So, yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was all right.
I've never seen the first one, so I'll have to watch that before I go.
Right. Well, you're in for a real treat.
Yeah. I mean, it's always funny looking at, like, old videos like that. Like, I love, like, in the Hack... You ever seen Hackers, the movie?
Oh, with, yeah, Angelina Jolie. That's the only thing that's noted for.
Yeah, right?
Hell yeah.
Well, no, also the the part where they like show, like, how do you visualize, you know, like computer movies and stuff like that? We've talked about engineering movies, like there's that new movie coming out about electrical engineering, but you know, for as much as we enjoy it, for the general public, it is boring. You know, how do you even visualize like math, right? So you think about like A Beautiful Mind, that was a math movie, right?
Right.
And how do you visualize these things so that people understand, you know, the processes that are going through, or even just making it intriguing or interesting? And it's pretty tough to do. And
I agree.
And hackers, I loved how they like showed, like, it was so corny. Like they would go inside a computer and then they'd trace along the route. And it's like, all right, I get what you're trying to do here, but come on, guys. Like,
well, then you're gonna love Tron then.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Because Tron, he literally goes inside you know, a computer and he And he battles the master control program. it's brilliant.
Yeah.
From a incredibly corny point of view. It's
and nerdy.
Just,
nerdy.
Oh yeah, it's way out there. But it's one of those movies that is absolutely ridiculous, but it's just become, you know, a pop culture sort of icon. You know, it's one of the, you know, it's like War Games. You know,
or Breaking Two Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, Breakdance 2. Yes, yeah. Electric Boogaloo. Oh, dear.
One of my favorites.
Right. I made the wife sit down and watch Breakdance, the first one. I didn't want to subject her to the second one. And and she loved it. She thought it was great.
I do, too. I have them both on DVD.
Right. And I made her sit down and watch Revenge of the Nerds as well.
That's a good one, too.
And she thought it was brilliant. She loved it.
All right, she passes the test. You can keep her.
Revenge of the Nerds passed the wife test. It really did. So
I mean, you could keep the wife, not that she can,
okay.
She can keep the movie.
Brilliant. What else is there? Sneakers. Have you seen Sneakers?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, Sneakers is great. Yep.
Yeah. I always remember the deaf guy with the listening to
exactly. He can just tell what everything is, what the data is, just by listening to it, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Totally out there, but, oh, that's a great algorithm. You know, not quite in those words,
right,
but, you know,
right.
He can sort of just decode the Braille, like he had like a Braille screen or something.
Yeah.
He could just watch the data, it's just like in The Matrix, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And sort of instantly decode it all.
If
good
only,
stuff.
If only life were like the movies, things would be much more interesting. And
right. Are there any good other hacker electronic tech movies out there?
I'm sure there's tons. There was, you know, there was actually a Bill Schweber article, the guy that writes analog articles for EE Times. He actually did an article about that a while back.
Right.
And there was a couple on there that were interesting. They were more like engineering related. But the ones that I put on there, the ones that I thought didn't call it out real well, that no one had called out yet, at least when I looked at it, were Iron Man. I mean, I know that it's not exactly an engineering movie.
Yep.
And I know it's kind of ridiculous, but I mean, Tony Stark is like the only cool guy that does electrical engineering, right?
Exactly. Well, actually, I can remember when that first came out, I was on the Oz Electronics Forum and the Psi Electronics Design. I was still back into Usenet back then. It was, how many years ago was that now? Three or 4 years ago or something?
Yeah.
Anyway, and people started to really talk about that movie on there because it was, as you say, it was, you know, an engineer sort of doing cool shit.
Right.
And, of course, it had the new technology, you know, all the stuff with the 3D modeling and, you know,
exactly.
Things like that. It was, it was awesome. So, it was highly talked about.
Yeah. And, I mean,
at the time.
I mean, it seems like, I mean, I think about this conversation we're having, right, and it seems kind of trivial in the scope of electronics and stuff. But at the same time, like, you really need these things. You think about kids coming up and, like, having any kind of clue what's going on with electronics, you know, like sometimes they get exposure early, but a lot of kids just don't even know anything about it, you know, like, so having even popular culture examples are very important, I think. So I'm hoping that Disney movie we talked about a while back will, you know, do something, but it would seem like more of a documentary, kind of like based on a true story thing, even just like the cool stuff, like the Tony Starks and the another one.
Exactly.
Another one I thought of was, have you seen How to Train Your Dragon?
No.
Okay. It's a Pixar or DreamWorks, one of the two. But right, the kid's like an engineer.
Oh, it's an animated.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, yeah. I love it. It was great. But it's a, you know, the kid's like an engineer. He's an inventor. You know, like just kind of like the inventor mindset. That's kind of the thing that kind of gets kids going, makes them want to be inventors. You know, I remember wanting to be an inventor when I was a kid, and now I sort of am. So it's awesome.
And the thing I love watching these movies, I actually watched Iron Man a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. It was on TV, and I said, you know, we sat down and watched it, and they always include an oscilloscope in there, right? There's always like an old Tektronix oscilloscope on the bench, and they're tweaking the dials and everything.
Yep.
And, you know, and what's the name of the chick, the Penny Potts or whatever?
Pepper Potts.
Penny Potts?
Pepper.
Pepper Potts, thank you. And, yeah, she was talking to him and, you know, come over here, and he switches off his gear and he, like, switches off the scope as if that switches off all of his gear, you know.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the prime control panel for his whole system.
Ooh, so modern.
Oh, and it's just hilarious, you know.
Yeah.
And, they always include a token. Any good movie will have a token scope in it.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Or a David Bowie film, or a David Bowie video too, of course.
Right, of course, yes.
Yeah.
If you've got any good movies, let us know.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure there's a lot more out there, so leave them in the comments if you're listening and you think, oh, yeah, they got to know about this one. So, yeah.
What do we got on the list? Because that wasn't on the list. I don't know where that came from. How did we get onto movies?
Bjork.
Bjork, right, yeah. And that's sort of segue. It's like surfing wiki.
Yeah.
You know, you know, five clicks links later, you're into La La Land, you know? It's crazy.
I heard an interesting way to learn new things is to set your Wikipedia page or your homepage to the Wikipedia random.
That's very cool.
That sounds like the biggest time suck in the world.
It would be, yeah. But if you got nothing, if you're in your Dilbert cubicle at work and you got nothing better to do.
That's true.
There's nothing better than surfing Wikipedia.
Yeah, learn.
It's great. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gold.
Yeah. So how about this this Intel fab? Did you see that article?
They're going to, 14 nanometers?
1-4. That is unbelievable. I mean, it's obvious that they're going to keep going smaller, right? But they're...
It's getting ridiculous. Come on. What are they going to produce at 14 nanometers? Are they actually going to get the yield at 14 nanometers?
Eventually,
they
will.
Seriously.
I mean, there's money in it, so they'll do it. Yeah.
I know. Anyway, it's $5 billion. They're building it in Chandler. Arizona, if you don't know where that is. And because not all of our listeners are in the U.S.
No. I'm glad they're not.
Or even if they are in the U.S., they may not know where Chandler is.
But
you're listening to the Amp Hour, you'll probably know where Chandler, Arizona is because it's the home of Microchip. So
I did not know where that is, so just for the record.
Oh, dude, come on.
Wow, sorry.
Famously the home of Microchip Corporation.
Nope.
Oh, God, shows how many PIC chips you use.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep, sorry. Yeah, so I have, you know, fab experience in my past, I was getting calls about this when they've been recruiting for that like crazy, trying to get people over there. So
okay,
I'd sent a couple job recs over to friends that are doing chip stuff still. But man, I don't get why they always put chip fabs in hot places. I guess not always because there's stuff up in Portland, but like,
that's crazy because they need a shitload of water, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think that would be the main...
I mean, that's one of the prime requirements for a chip fab is a crap load of water.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so you need to build it next to a lake or something.
Hey, you know,
you?
People could come to Cleveland. We got tons of water. It's fresh.
Right.
It's delicious most of the time. It's only sometimes on fire. Come on, people.
Okay.
You know how that happened, right?
Excellent.
Have you ever heard of that, Dave, or no?
No, please do tell.
Okay.
On fire.
Yeah, I thought you should know this. So basically, that's what Cleveland's famous for. There's actually a beer named after the Burning River IPA. But
right.
Basically, that's how the EPA started. It was in the 70s. You know, there's so much pollution everywhere. Yep. Or early 70s or late 60s. And the river started on fire twice. So that's how the EPA started in the U.S.
Because what they poured, the chemicals into the river?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of the iron manufacturing and stuff.
Right. That happened up in Queensland, up in Bundaberg, yeah. Which is famous for their rum. You may know their rum. Anyway, if you're into rum, you'll know Bundy rum, Bundaberg rum. Yeah, and the town, I think, because I was up there, and they told the story of how their river that went through the town caught on fire, the whole river, because all the they had an overflow from the plant that was making the rum or something, and it all went into the river, and it all caught a light, and it was a light for, you know, days or a week or something like that.
Wow.
It's just crazy.
And it was actually rum that was on fire?
Or some part of it that makes up rum. I don't know. Or some process that, you know, I don't know.
Hmm.
But something accidentally poured into the river and it caught on fire somehow or something like that.
Huh.
If memory serves me correctly, don't quote me on this.
See, I think rum's a little different than, like, industrial waste.
Right. Yeah, but everyone was crying because, oh no, all the rum's going up in smoke, you know? And, yes.
Yeah, so that's what Cleveland's famous for, but we do have a lot of water here, so, you know, chip fabs, if you're thinking about it, give us a thought. I mean, really anywhere, the Great Lakes, I mean, there's a lot of water up here, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why do they build them in dry, hot places in the middle of the desert like that?
I don't know, because Austin was like that.
Which I'm assuming Chandler is.
Yeah, I mean, it's Arizona, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I was in Austin at a chip fab, and there's a couple chip Freescales down there, IBM's down there. They're not all manufacturing down there, but some of them are. AMD's down there, got a manufacturing plant. And so, you know, Texas doesn't have a lot of water. So I don't know.
No, you wouldn't imagine.
I think it's just more kind of entrenched talent. You know, it's hard to get people to move somewhere. If tomorrow I did start a fab in Cleveland, it wouldn't be easy to get people here.
No, that's right. You would have to offer them really big incentives, and that eats into your margin, I guess. That eats into your operating costs.
Yeah, exactly. And at that point, it's like, why not go to the optimal? Why not just go to Asia? You know, like, that's what a lot of people say. Why not just, if you're going there, why not just take all your production to TSMC? You know, like, I'm sure that's the kind of thought process it goes through. But sometimes when you make that decision, you have to, like, dive in and really make that investment and draw people there. So.
And interestingly, in the article, of course, no surprise, really, that some new state sponsorship had something to do with it, some new law they just so happened to pass last week.
Huh, weird.
That gave them, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
That gives incentives to companies to build stuff like that in that state. So, that had everything to do with
that's just the new norm, though. I mean, like, it happens other places, too, you know, like, even in China and Australia, I'm sure, too. And
it does. Yeah, it does. It happens here. Yes, states put up incentives for companies to come.
The interesting thing about that is when it gets to a really micro level, like, even here locally, like, we have enough towns around here where they start offering incentives, and so you have, like, companies jumping from town to town, and they start fighting with each other, so it can right. It can turn nasty, you know, like, you know, it's interesting from a business perspective if you have a business and you could kind of go to where the best deal is, but on the other hand, it sucks for, like, you know, say you're a mayor and you're trying to keep people in a city, that's a tough thing to do these days, because a suburb can turn around and give a really sweet tax advantage and boom.
For sure.
There goes half your, you know, then your roads get worse and everything else too. So.
Yep. I know. It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
You know, trying to attract all these large companies And then at the opposite end of the scale, you've got the likes of Walmart, who don't need incentives. They just come in and bury everyone else and spread like a cancer.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's either one or the other, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, speaking about enticing people, I saw an article, I think it was from Suzanne Dufree from EDN, and it was about how New York City's trying to get Stanford to come to the city and start a tech center there. Let me see if I can find it.
Oh, right. Okay.
I don't know if you saw that.
Actually, in the middle of the city. Actually in Manhattan itself.
Downtown. They're calling it Silicon Alley, instead of Silicon Alley. Valley.
We have a Silicon Alley here in Sydney.
Do you?
Or we used to.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was just a bunch of shops. It was just a bunch of, you know, all of the famous shops back in the 70s and 80s. So they were all in one street, and that was Silicon Alley.
Oh, that's sweet. I love when they do that for, like, when you go shopping then, you know?
Yeah. They were all literally right next door to each other.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be Dick Smith, J. Carr, David Reed, and Tandy all in line. It was great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know if it's working, but like they're trying to draw in like Stanford and all these different companies and stuff like that. And it's the same kind of argument. You're like, how do you try and come to a company and say to them, well, don't go to China or India where you can have, you know, a tenth of your operating cost. Come to New York City where you can't even have, you know, like your rug installed without a union contractor. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, like, it's a cool idea. You know, it's good to have that kind of localized localized commerce, but you're not going to be putting a fab in there, obviously, and you're definitely not going to be operating at a lower cost. So it's kind of the when you start thinking about the business side of things, you know, it starts to really suck.
Well, look, I mean, the whole, you know, you mentioned like one-tenth the operating, you know, one-tenth the cost to go to China, you know. In the end, it's nothing like that, you know.
Oh, no, of course,
that's
not
a real
exactly.
myth, you know. People think that it's, you know, so, you know, it's an order of magnitude cheaper to set up in China, and it's clearly not. Otherwise, Intel wouldn't be doing it.
Right, well,
you
that's
know,
a good
they
point.
Go through, they do the sums, and they go, it's probably very close. Hey, we'll stay here in, you know, US.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, there's not much in it once you know, because the cost is in actually building the plan. It's not so much, you know, the ongoing, these plans just cost, you know, they actually cost $5 billion to make.
Yeah.
So, you know, the operating costs after that are sort of almost, you know, sort of a drop in the bucket, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
well, yeah, it's
China's not as cheap as you think.
No, I agree, and I mean, you highlighted that with Agilent coming back to the U.S. too, and I mean, I think even just like monetary pressures too. You know, like China's cost of living is increasing. The U.S. is stagnant at least. I don't know about Australia, and so it starts to become and that's before you start looking at all the stuff that like that actually matters. You know, like the. How do you communicate across timelines? How do you communicate across language barriers? There's all that stuff that a lot of people don't put into their spreadsheets, and then they make these decisions and they're like, oops.
Oops. Yeah, we can't. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Nah, it's a big deal because actually dealing with remote sites is hard.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you've, as you say, you've got the language and you've got the time barrier. It's
and cultural barrier too. I mean,
of course.
That can't be discounted either. You know, like, If you have company policies that say you can't go out drinking with your work buddies, but you go to Japan and it's expected because that's a very strong business tradition there, you know, like you go out and you relax with your coworkers and that's where real business gets done, and that's a cool thing, I think. I mean, like, but
absolutely,
you know, if that's a company policy in the U.S. that you can't do that, and then you go over there, it's like, well, then you got to start making exceptions and having interesting different policies too. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I saw
now you mentioned Agilent.
Yes.
And that segues beautifully into the new Agilent scope, and more precisely the MegaZoom 4 ASIC used in this thing. You know, which is really, you know, they've been developing this thing for years, and it's bleeding edge, and it's basically allows ridiculous scope performance in a one single chip.
Yeah.
You know, everything's in there. You can see it in my latest Agilent 3000 teardown. I explain, show a block diagram, explain what's in there. Anyway, it's very, very cool chip. And I found out yesterday that, probably not surprisingly, as all things, you know, all good things tend to do, very clever things like this, it pretty much comes down to one person. And that guy is Matt Holcomb, who actually developed this ASIC chip.
So now you're going to have to explain yourself and say, not surprisingly. Why is that not surprisingly?
Because I found over the decades that, you know, pretty much it usually comes down to one smart guy. If you try and design something by committee, then it just, you know, it just doesn't work. It, you know, and it's just a piece of shit, generally speaking.
Okay.
So, you know, all of the really smart, cool things really come down to the passion and the execution of one or maybe two people. You know, it's very few people in the end. So you might imagine, you know, this new flagship ASIC that Agilent have developed, oh, they'll have a team of 20 engineers working on it. No, it was this one guy, apparently. I'm sure he had a bit of help here and there, but yeah, generally it's the brainchild of one person.
Yeah.
You're not... Yeah, you disagree, obviously.
I don't disagree, but I think saying that it's a brainchild is a different thing than saying it's... Because it seems like what you're saying is like it's designed by one guy, but really it's architected by one guy, right? I mean, that's what you're really saying.
Well, I was told that he was the one who did it.
So he did all the layout, all the testing.
He pretty much... well, you know, I don't know about the testing part of it, but it's his design. He laid it out, so I believe. So I'm led to believe, anyway. Huh. But as I said, you know, there may have been, you know, the odd person helping him. But, yeah, it was, you know, I think he was more than just the overall architect. I think he actually got down there and actually did it. I don't know. I haven't spoken to the guy, but that's the story I heard.
So well, I guess the thing I would think is the difference between, like, I guess it depends on the scope of the chip, too. So like, if you're doing, like, an analog design where you're actually laying out, like, by hand, like, the chip.
Right, no, I'm sure this is all, you know, VHDL and then...
Well, probably Verilog, you know, but yeah.
And, probably Verilog, yeah. Something like that. And then, yeah, you know, I'm sure there are people who, you know, do the testing and, you know, the test benches and all that sort of stuff as well. But, yeah, anyway, that's what I'm led to believe. And it wasn't terribly surprising that one person could design such an ASIC over, you know, several years.
Yeah. That's...
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty badass. I mean, I'll say that. I mean, like, I can't imagine a boss coming to you and being like, you know, we just need you to design an entire chip. I know it happens, right? I mean, I know it happens, but
yeah, of course.
But like, but also saying, oh, well, it's also going to be the basis of our entire scope line. So that's kind of crazy,
right? No pressure at all,
right?
You know?
Oh yeah. Oh, by the way, don't mess it up because we'll go out of business.
Well, no, it may have started out, you know, they just put one person on it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it didn't intend, you know, just like as a research thing, maybe. Well, no, it's based on existing technology, okay? Like, you didn't design it from scratch. It's called the MegaZoom 4 for a reason,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, yeah, he didn't do it down to every last transistor.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it was very, it's actually quite a significantly different architecture to the version 3 of the chip. I went to a presentation where they explained the differences between the Rev 3 and the Rev 4.
Yeah.
And, it was quite a lot of difference.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like half an order of magnitude better performance.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the thing I always find interesting about scopes these days, too, is like any scope you really open up, it's a lot of that. You know, it's a lot of system level. On the system level, it's a lot of, like, big chips. But, like, you know, like, but you go and open it. Like, I have pictures on my site of, like, old tech scopes. Like, I have a 425. And you open that thing up, and it's all discrete. You know, obviously, they're not doing that even close to anymore. And
no, exactly.
But it's just interesting how it's moved that way. You know, people have been predicting it for years with, like, IP stacks and all that other stuff, a lot of FPGAs and a lot of ASICs. But there's hardly anything else in there anymore. It's a RF front end.
I wouldn't say. If you look at my teardown, like, you might think that from an overall system level, but if you look at the sheer number of components, there's a crap load
of
individual passive on. There's a whole bunch of LM324s, for goodness sake, you know? There's LM324s in an ultra modern scope that's been released.
I guess so. I mean, yeah, I know. I saw brilliant. That there's 324s in there, and that's just a cost thing, though. I mean, like, they wouldn't be using LM324s unless it was some grunt part and they just needed to. I mean, they probably got those things for
exactly
sub pennies, you know, like.
That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a hell of a lot of components in there, hell of a lot of passives and a hell of a lot of just discrete.
There is, but it's a lot of power and it's a lot, you know, like the signal chain stuff is different, I think. You know?
I know, that's what I'm talking about. It's, at the system level, yes, it's basically the big badass chips, right?
Right.
But, you know, when you get down to building the board, it's far from that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not
and
saying
if you're
it's
talking
like,
the bomb cost as well.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah. But
know.
I mean, it's not all discretes. It's mostly like the highest level functions are mostly in chips. That's what I'm saying.
They are, yes, they are embedded into. Yeah. Yep.
Chris wins. Boom.
Not really, no.
I know. Sorry. I just wanted to say that.
Right. I'll never admit defeat.
I know. Speaking of, there's an article in Electronic News about...
Oh, God. Here we come, boys and girls.
Here we go. Talking about Chris winning. About big, big, big companies and the future of printed electronics.
Not in the home, dude. Not in the home.
That's right. Yeah. I know.
Exactly. Hey, there we go. He admits defeat. There we go. You heard it. It's on the record. He said not in the home. It's never going to happen.
That's what I'm saying.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
So let's look at
the company. The industry.
Samsung. Nokia. Come on. Those are big names. Panasonic. These are big.
And they're the ones who currently develop chips, which they've been doing for the last 50 years, and they've spent hundreds of trillions of dollars doing it and refining it. And
I don't know about hundreds of trillions.
It's got to be over 50 years. I don't know. Whatever, right? An infinite amount of money.
Yeah.
I'll jump from trillions to infinite.
Yes.
Working on this shit.
Yeah.
And there is no effing way in hell that you're going to print these things, build your chips in your own home because they're so complex. It'll be the same with the printed chips. The processors will be so exotic and complex. Again, they might be lower cost, but they, you know, it's not something you can, you know, churn out on your kitchen table. It's crazy.
For example, cost reductions has not panned out to be such a big issue. This is a quote, by the way. Nor is there a trend towards organic versions taking over most applications. So people thought that, oh, it's never going to be cheap enough. Guess what? It's getting cheaper. Getting cheaper,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah, but cheaper, that's what I mentioned. Cheaper has nothing to do with being able to do it in your own home.
Mm.
Yes, they build big plants to do it, and it's very cheap for them because the processors are cheaper than silicon. That's what they're talking about because silicon is so complex and so involved that even an order of magnitude less complex than a silicon chip is ultra cheap, but it's still an order of magnitude complex, more complex than what you can do in your own home. So it's not going to happen, dude.
Moving on. They're introducing... No, I'm moving on to the rest of the article. including principal copper and a replace silver inks for, and also principal CNT, I'm not sure what that is, graphene, and other conductors and semiconductors with the promise of even better performance. So, basically, this guy, the guy who wrote this article is about, is doing a roadmap, and the roadmap is a lot more rosy than they had previously thought. And so, it looks like pessimists aren't doing quite as well. So, looks like we might see a little uptick here, Dave. You better start.
Oh, of course. No, I've never.
You better
ever debated that silly. You know that that printed chips are not going to have a huge future. I've always said they will. Of course they will. There's tons of research going in. You've been able to do it for a long time in various way, shapes, and forms.
Mm.
You know it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen in the home. It's not going to be viable, and there's going to be no point to it, and it won't be a revolution like you claimed.
All I'm saying is start surfing for those tickets to Cleveland, because you're gonna have to pay up, buddy.
Nah.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
No chance at all. My money is safe.
we'll see. Yeah.
You're going to flog that dead horse forever, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's...
You're going to ride that sucker all the way home.
All the way to the bank.
Yeehaw! Oh, my goodness. Boy. And the arguments are still the same. Anyway, let's not go there.
Yeah. You know, there's another... So one of our former workbench of the week guys, Luvin Blanca, he wrote in, too. There's a video on wax making. On wax, printing wax masks for chips. So that's another link I'll add in there. We don't have to talk about it, but that's another helpful thing. If you don't have to use photoresist, if you can use wax, that's a good
right.
That's a good sign. So
just saying. Right. Yeah. Sure. What is that in relation to though? I haven't seen that article. Like as in like wax directly on the board?
Well, like wax for as a resist material for etching.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you could actually put wax directly onto the board to trace out the circuit. Is that the thing? And then throw it directly in the etchant? Is that...
This is for chips, actually.
Oh, right. It's actually for chip level. It's not for board level manufacturing.
Yeah, okay. And it's actually it's an hour long video, unfortunately. But you can catch some of it, and it's on YouTube. So I'll post a link to that. But
what idiot would produce an hour long video?
Well, if my bench takes much longer, I might join that club, Dave.
Right. I can't believe you didn't get a time lapse photo of you constructing the thing.
I know.
Oh, they're so fun, those time-lapse photos.
I like them, but my video equipment is lacking, so.
Right.
Maybe if...
Well, how hard is it to stick a camera on a tripod and take one shot every half an hour?
Half an hour? It wasn't a built-in function, so I didn't do it.
Right.
I should have. I got a lot
of
videos.
Yeah, I can understand. I'm lazy. My little compact camera has a built-in time-lapse feature.
I wish mine would have.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
Hey, so we missed some shout-outs. I wanted to give a couple shout-outs real quick. So one is actually a podcast for Hackerspaces. I hadn't heard about it previously, and I think it's only on iTunes. It's called Signal, and it's
right.
It seems like it's monthly. So that's okay. Good. Another one that's kind of electronic.
Good work, guys.
Yeah. So I haven't listened yet, but that's something to listen to. And the other
only on iTunes.
Yeah, I think it's only on iTunes. It's weird.
Jeez, no, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of iTunes, personally.
Not same here.
Yeah. But maybe I'm wrong. Anyways. Yeah, the other one is the Savage Circuits chat. Wow. That's...
Yeah, you've been crapping on about that lately.
Crapping on.
The Savage Circuits thing? Well, that's the typical terminology here in Australia.
Oh, okay.
Crapping on, talking up.
Never heard that one.
Talking about.
Yeah. anyways, so that's pretty cool.
It's just like an IRC chat thing, is it?
Yeah, it's real simple. Just twice a month, first and third Friday. So got invited to just drop into that and was chatting for a while on Friday. So that's pretty cool. I don't know. It seems like it's a lot of the Parallax guys, actually, so. Got to meet the...
Okay, yep.
Ken and... I forget the other guy's name. Oh, Joe Grand. He actually used to have a TV show. Yep. I didn't know about that. Joe Grand.
Right, yeah, I know. He's the maker dude.
Yeah, Prototype This was his show.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Right.
But
it only
lasted for a year, so I don't know. I'll have to check it out. I mean, I don't have cable, so I don't ever check these shows out. I don't even get to watch Mythbusters, unfortunately, but...
Well, you can download them, you know. There's this thing called Torrent.
Dave, that is illegal. I am reporting you to the authorities. The MPAA is coming for you.
Oh, dear, it is.
Yeah, it's, but it was cool sitting in there and just BSing about stuff, so.
Awesome. Yeah. Every man and his dog's got their own show.
I know. Well... We're not.
Did I mention?
We're not special. You know?
Have I mentioned before on the Amp Hour that who's that? What's that geek website? Going to get myself in a pickle here because I'm not going to be able to remember.
It's EEV blog. There's a bunch of geeks on there.
Right. It's anyway, one of these big, one of the big hacker gadget. No, not hacker, but gadget. You know, websites, gadget review, they just talk about, phones all the time and other gadgets. And it's basically one of the biggest ones in the world.
Is it Engadget?
The name. Engadget. Yes, Engadget. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Engadget. And have we mentioned this before?
I think I did mention it once, but I don't remember what we said about it. You're talking about the TV show, right?
The TV show. Yeah. They've got this TV show. I don't know whether it's on cable or free-to-air or whatever, but...
I think it's just internet. God,
it's like they've got a massive studio. Oh, yeah, they actually produce it. I think they might. They might just produce it for the internet.
Yeah.
And that's the amazing thing. It's got a studio audience, you'd get any, million-dollar primetime TV show, and they've got a massive studio, a massive audience. They have special guests on. They had The Woz a couple of weeks back or something, and... It's, and the list of people actually producing this thing is just like a huge, $100 million budget TV show.
Huh.
It's crazy.
That's...
So I don't know how they can afford to do that when they're just producing video for the internet. God, how much are those advertisers paying?
They must be, I mean, they must be picking up on it or something. Because, I mean, we were talking before the show about how much people pay for internet stuff. And it's insane. I mean, like, I think it's just insane in general how much people are paying for advertising. But it's a big, big business, you know?
It must be big.
Yeah.
Because these guys produce a professional TV show, which must cost millions of dollars to actually produce it. They've got to hire a studio and they've got to, you know, hire, you know, and you go through the list of people and there's, you know, someone who sweeps the floor, you know, at the end of it, the credits roll down and there's the floor sweeper or something. And, you know,
yeah, that's what they're concerned about. They're, we can't make this show. We need a floor sweeper.
With it. Yeah. It's just, it's crazy. Yeah. Anyway.
But I think the real money there is, like, you'll never see that for an electronic show because the chip makers know that people are going to buy chips and it's not a big enough audience. But I think that the gadget audience is just, it's a big audience. You know, there's a lot of...
It's massive. And a lot of... Every geek in the world, you know, and we're talking, you know, 100 million.
Right, exactly.
Maybe not that many, but...
Or it's even broader than that, too. I mean, people who have a show, or who just have a smartphone and are interested in smartphones, not necessarily a geek, they might just want to find out more about it, and they might find that show. And
yep.
Boom. Big old audience for advertisers, so...
No. It's massive.
Go where the money is.
Anyway. yeah, that's it. I'm in the wrong business. I'm in this little niche field of electronics. Oh, God, I should be reviewing gadgets.
Sitting there talking to some nerd in Cleveland and, man, you are...
Yeah, exactly. Just, what's the deal with that?
It's a waste of time.
That's it.
Well, you know what you should do? You should buy scratch-off tickets, but I hear that's not that lucrative. You posted a link about that.
I did post a link about this, and what the deal is we'll put the link up, of course. Some guy in Toronto, he's a Canadian, and he's a geological statistician. That's a fun job. You know, he's into stats and math, and, you know, it's actually very interesting. I used to be in the geological side of things.
Oh, okay.
And, he basically calculates where, you know, oil and other stuff is, you know, based on...
Well, I mean, you say statistician, and I just go...
Right, yeah. Anyway, he's a smart dude with numbers, right? And they tell the story in here of how he never bought into the lottery because he knows the odds and all that, and he just couldn't be bothered, right? So somebody gave him a couple of scratchy tickets, and they were sat in his wallet for a year or something, and he decided, oh, scratch these things, you know, and he scratched them, and he looked at the numbers, and he went, I think there's a pattern here, and it just, you know, it just jumped out at him, like it's some noughts and crosses game. Okay, it was some, you know, special variation of
noughts and crosses.
If you've ever played these scratch lotteries, noughts and crosses, tic-tac-toe, I'm sorry.
That's right. I was going to say, tic-tac-toe. Let's make sure we clear it up for the people at home there.
Right. Noughts and crosses is what we call it
here. Yeah, that's cool.
Because we actually put a nought and a cross, a zero and a cross in the squares.
X's and O's. Right.
And, X's and O's. Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, it's a variation of that. It's that game. And he went, I think there's a pattern here. And he just spent a couple of days thinking about it. Like, he didn't even go out and buy more tickets and prove it. Like, he came up with this theory in his head that he knew must be right, and he knew he had cracked the code because the ticket actually, before you scratch it, has a bunch of numbers on there.
Yeah.
And he figured out that just by looking at those numbers, you could tell the odds of whether or not that ticket was going to be a winner or not.
Yeah.
So you could go in the newsagent and just look at the ones that are being displayed and know that one's going to be a winner. And he figured this out all in his head, right? And then he, you know, now if I did this, the practical engineer in me would have gone, right, okay, I've got a theory. I'll go out and I'll buy 100 tickets and, you know, scratch them and see if my theory's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He didn't even bother. He was so sure that his theory was correct.
Mathematicians, man.
Mathematicians. Bloody mathematicians. He was so sure that, you know, he didn't have to go out and do that.
That's awesome,
and
though.
He tried to... Yeah. Anyway, the story, what you were saying is that it's not lucrative, is that he did, once again, did the math and figured out, okay, I've figured out, I've broken the code for this thing. Now, if I did it as a full-time job, I'd have to go around to every news agent, okay, you know, in the state or whatever, and, you know, that'd take X amount of hours to go around to each one looking at X amount of tickets, and I'd get X amount return on average. And it would pay less than his day job, which is a consultant for, you know, doing the stats stuff. So really, he decided, well, this is no value to me. I can't make money out of it, so I may as well tell them about it. It's great.
That is great.
And they didn't. Yeah, and they didn't believe him.
Yeah.
You know, he contacted the head dude at the lotteries, and they basically just fobbed him off. So he went, right. He went out and bought, you know, 20 tickets or something, and he didn't scratch them. What he did is sorted them into winning and losing piles, and he attached a note to it and sent that to the guy. And he was 19. He had 19 out of 20 correct. And within a couple of hours, they called him up and went, yeah, oh shit. And they actually the game was flawed,
yeah.
And they actually took it off the market. So
wow,
there you go. Awesome story. I love
it. It's a great
You've
story.
Got to read of
I
it.
Can't believe you still play the lottery.
That's because this particular game didn't pay out much.
Gotcha.
It was a, you know, it was crock.
Gotcha.
Tell my mum that. She won $100,000 on the scratch lottery.
Oh, good lord.
This was back in 1980. This was back in the early to mid-80s.
Wow.
Mid-80s, I think, when $100,000 was the top prize.
That's a chunk of change,
okay?
Right there, huh?
Yeah, exactly. No, people win, so that's why I'm
in it. I was going to say, that's good conditioning for you to be playing there. Right. Yeah.
No, it's not. I play it because, well, $100,000, I wouldn't be impressed with I can't quit my job if I win $100,000. That's stupid.
Mm.
I'm in it for the big money. I don't play the scratch lotteries. I just play the regular lotteries, which pay out, you know, $5, $10 million, that sort of thing.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah,
well, you know who
I'm in it for the big one.
You know who could use that is some of that money is Freescale. You see that they're
what's happened to Freescale? Poor Freescale.
I know, horrible transition too. Sorry about that. But basically, they got taken private a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember that.
Vaguely.
I remember because I've used some of the chips before, and I was worried that they were going to go under, and then they got bought out by Blackstone, which is like a equity group. So basically, they leveraged all this debt, and they said, "Okay, we're going to go private now, and we'll just be able to do whatever we want to, and just kind of rework our
yep.
loans." And now they're going public again, and it's like,
right? And so, of course, because they want to make a shitload of money.
I don't know. They're not though.
Fast.
They're doing it because they want. I think they need money. They need to pay off some of the debt, and they can't. And they it's not
oh,
helping.
Oh, so that's their only option. They're being forced into it.
I think
are they?
So. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean,
right?
But the thing okay. I wanted to point out is just like. Do you think there's going to be like a scaling down of chip companies? I mean, we keep seeing these trends that are bigger and bigger because they have to be, right? So like Intel's building a $5 billion fab, and TSMC is, I saw a thing today about them growing 22% this year or something ridiculous like that.
Right.
But like, what direction can they go? I mean, like you can't go smaller. You'll get eaten up by the big guys, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not allowed to make chips in your basement. Someone told me that. I mean, like,
exactly,
yeah.
And that person is right.
Yep.
And so it's like expand or die, right? Is that
I mean, and so they it's like I think they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Is I don't know.
Well, that's I guess not terribly surprising. I don't know. You know, how do you survive as just a low level chip maker? Have they got a fab of their own, or are they a fabless company?
Freescale has some fabs. Yeah, they actually have some
down
in Austin.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Freescale used to be Motorola,
right.
and then they got spun off, and Motorola still makes phones, and Freescale makes the chips. That's not for you
okay.
Dave. I know
right.
You know that, but
no, I wasn't sure if Freescale got any of the fabs out of the deal when they spun off.
Oh, I think they did. I think they got all of them. I think. I don't.
Oh right.
I don't,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it's their
right.
entire chip. It was the entire Motorola chip division.
Oh, the entire chip.
Yeah.
Line.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, I think they moved some of their stuff to like the TSMCs, but not all of it. I think so. Maybe that might be wrong.
Why? Because they didn't have enough capacity in their own fabs, or did they shut some down due to?
I don't know.
Operational cost. Ugh,
it's just amazing because it's such a, you know, it's a huge part of the economy, right? Like if Freescale disappeared tomorrow, right? That would mean,
yep.
Automakers would be up a creek. You know, they're really big for automakers.
Well, the answer is they won't. They wouldn't be allowed to fail.
Right, exactly.
That's the answer, right? They're, you know,
it's ridiculous though.
There are market forces which keep you afloat. You know,
yeah.
or or ensure that you're bought out and some of your chip lines survive, right. You know, all that sort of stuff. So, I don't know. Will someone come along and just snap them up? I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know. The it's inconceivable the amount of money. Like it directly affects you and me, right? So like you love Microchip.
Yeah.
And if Microchip went out tomorrow, you'd be up a creek, right? I mean, I mean, for some projects, right? Not necessarily all of them.
Whole industry would be.
Anyone else, right?
Well, that's right.
There's no way it's ever going to be different, right? Unless someone else gets just as big and then they eat them up. But, man, it's crazy. It's just crazy how the industry has changed over the years. And obviously, I haven't been a part of it as long as some older people.
Has it? I don't know. Mergers and gobbling up and all that sort of stuff has been happening since... You know, the days of, since the days of the transistor companies.
Yeah, that's true, but really? they weren't billion-dollar companies then. You know, like, they weren't...
Oh, I think they... Well,
it's a scale. It's the scale of it, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, scale, but still, the industry hasn't changed. It's just, you know, just the actual numbers have gotten bigger, that's all.
Yeah.
So the way things work, I don't think it's changed that much.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but it's...
They won't go under. Companies like that do not just go under.
Yeah.
Somebody will snap them up for a bargain and keep certain chip lines going and stuff like that. So maybe it'll be Arizona Microchip.
Arizona Microchip? Who's that?
Arizona Microchip. I'm going with their old name.
Oh, is that what they used to be?
Didn't you know that? They used to be called Arizona Microchip.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. See, I know nothing about them.
Ah, there you go. I don't know when they changed it to just Microchip.
Yeah.
Or even if they technically were called Arizona, but I'm sure they were called Arizona Microchip at one stage. Yeah, absolutely. Because that was branded on everything they had was Arizona Microchip. So that's how you knew where they came from. They came from Arizona.
Right.
You know? It was.
Well, I didn't know that, so no, I wouldn't know that. But now you've told me and now I know, so. Learning.
There you go. Yep. So I thought I'd throw in their old name there.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe they'll buy them because they're making a huge profit at the moment.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
They could gobble up everyone, Microchip.
Good for them, man.
Yeah. They're one of the few companies who are making a profit at the moment, especially in the microchip
sector. Oh, no, all the tech companies.
All the
other companies are making tons of money, dude. Don't kid yourself. They all are.
No. You look at the who's who of the microcontroller market.
Oh, okay.
They're making a loss. They're making a loss.
Really? Oh, I didn't. I haven't seen that lately. Yep. I guess I'll have to look at that.
Well, Atmel have not made a cent since they started out.
Really?
Yeah, really. Boy. It's, you know, maybe one quarter here or there or something like that. But overall, they've made a loss every year since they started.
Boy, that's got to be depressing.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
That's why they almost went under and Microchip tried to buy them and, you know. So, yeah. Yes. It's a nasty business. Or, you know, it may have picked up in the last year or so, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's like... Last 3-4 years has been really shocking for the microcontroller manufacturers. So
yeah, I guess there's just so many entrants in that market. You know, it's just you got to kind of carve out your niche. You know, you got to carve out your niche.
And there's so many products; they've got so many variations.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just endless. You know, which is good.
User, I guess. I don't know. It sucks when I hate when you have a chip. Or a part even, you know, and you know that they were just trying to satisfy a ton of different markets, and you get set into one, and then they're like, oh, sorry, there's no money here. And it's...
There's no money, and they drop
it.
Yeah,
it's like you almost want to just design to the biggest person. It would be nice if, like in the industrial market, right? Industrial and like, automotive, right? That's kind of the market I work in. And, like, you know, if Toyota or GM or any of the or Ford, you know, like if they would just publish some of the chips they're thinking about using, and then I could design design to that, because you know those chips are going to stick around. They have these contracts where they're going to they're like
exactly.
We're going to be around for 20 years. It's like, okay, well, I want to use that part too. That'd be
For sure.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's a service like that. I know there's the teardown service, like iSupply is one of them, but I don't know if they do that for cars.
Well, why can't the chip makers just publish the number of sales? for each chip, or have how popular each chip is. There's an idea.
Yeah.
There's an amp hour idea for the manufacturers. Yeah. I know they all listen. All the CEOs of all the major companies listen to the amp hour.
Yeah.
And here's my idea for you. On your website, next to each product, have a little indicator which shows how popular that product is.
Oh, that would be nice.
And then through natural attrition, products will die out. You'll save cost. People won't get stuck with orphan parts.
Yeah.
Everyone's a winner.
That is everyone's a winner. I like that one. All right. That is it.
There you go.
Amp Hour original right
My checks, yes, the invoice is in the mail.
Yeah. I mean, that would be great. And you think about it from a manufacturing standpoint, too. Then they can optimize processes for, you know, that very high runner chip. And you don't have supply issues, you know, like as much, because you're cranking it out. If you need, you know, 10% more output, then you push it to TSMC or whoever else is the big fab. And I don't know, maybe they don't want to do it because of competition. I don't know why they wouldn't want to do that.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. There's sure there's dozens of reasons you could think of that would be a, you know, a PR nightmare for them or something like that. I don't know. Yeah, they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, but it's a winner.
It is a winner, yeah.
It's a practical winning idea. I don't know. They'll find a million excuses.
From the
not
trenches
to do it,
level, that is a great idea. For the people that are actually designing, that is something that would be very useful, I think.
Yep, absolutely. You know, because how do you know how popular a part is? You've got to have this whole knowledge of, you know, all these products that's used in the industry. You know, oh, okay, this Atmel chip's used in the Arduino, and it might be popular. No, because, well, you know, it might be popular in the Arduino, but the Arduino has only made 100,000 over the last, you know, 5 years. That's not many. That's a drop in the bucket for Atmel. You know, how do you know how much, as you said, you know, some of the automakers are using
it? Or like to you just even don't, like you know, television manufacturers, anyone, right? I mean, like
anyone, any consumer, you know,
exactly. And
people making white goods and
you know, they could still play games with all the pricing and everything too, because you know, like if Panasonic's making a TV, do they still make TVs? I don't know if they do. If Samsung's making a TV and they use a certain chip, they're not going to give you and me the same price that they give Samsung, but...
Oh, no, of course not, but you know, at least you'll be able to get it, because they're churning out fewer parts and more of those popular
ones. Exactly, yeah. Much better situation for them.
Yeah.
All right, we'll have to continue talking about that in the future, and maybe eventually one CEO will listen.
Right.
Doubtful.
I don't know. I could call up Steve Sangi at Microchip. I've got his number.
Oh yeah, you should do that. You should send him the link. You know, if they did that, that would be badass. You seem to love them so much. You should send him a link.
Maybe they could get on board.
Send him a link, man.
I might. Absolutely.
The power of the Dave Jones right there, man.
You're right.
Influence in the market, man.
Yep. All right. Maybe I'll capture a segment and I'll send him the, you know, I don't want to waste his time listening to the entire
thing. He'll love it, right? We talked about Microchip a bunch, even though I didn't know where they were located or what they were originally called.
Right. There you go.
Or their mission statement.
Is that on Wiki? I wonder if you go to Wikipedia.
I don't know. I bet it is. You mean like what it used to be called?
Yeah, the history like that. I'm just typing in now.
Well, I'm sure it's on there somewhere. We'll post the link if there is indeed something on there.
Right.
Instead of listening to you.
Microchip technology, they call it.
We'll let people do their own research. Everybody could set their homepage to random on there.
Right. All right. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
We'll talk to you next week, guys.
See ya.